Here we go. Hey guys, before we get started, check out my Jason Voorhees costume mask that I got. It's back here behind me. If you're watching the YouTube, you can see this. If you can't, you just get to listen to me tell you how awesome it is. I collect some bitchin' masks. As you know, I got a Dark Ride Freddy, which I'm so fucking proud of. And then I got this this Jason Voorhees from part 7, which is my favorite looking one, even with his goofy ass teeth. I love it. This one's done by Horror Costume Studios. So big shout out to them. Took forever. There was a lot of supply chain issues. But it finally showed up, and the mask I custom made myself. So I got the Hawk up there. I got the Jason wearing it. So big shout out to Horror Costume Studios. Thank you for coming through on that latex mask. It's so fucking dope.
They made the Jason skin mask, and you made the hockey mask over
it? I made
it.
The hockey mask, yeah, because I wanted to do a custom hockey mask because I see all these people doing dope custom hocks, and I wanted to do one that was a part 7 mask, but with like Freddy claw marks because I got the Jason and the Freddy together at last, and so I put some Jason claw, some Freddy claw marks through the Jason mask, which is pretty sweet.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Little custom action.
Which mask did you use? Like, what did you buy?
I just bought a guy named Big Hush who out of Texas, and he does all these, like, he just sells you blank masks, and I got a blank part 7.
Is it a blank, like specifically a blank Freddy mask as opposed to just like a random hockey mask?
It's just a blank random hockey mask. It's just because you can buy them in bulk, and I think he buys them in bulk and then sends them.
You
can
buy them. You put on the Jason, like the red triangle paint and everything.
I put on the red triangle paint and tried to make it fairly accurate to the flavor of part 7. Because look, if you guys want to get into some nerdy ass shit, all the masks are very different, and like they start to get like very specific. And part 7, of course, has the big chunk missing out the side, so you can see his goofy ass teeth. And who is it? Jaeger? Kevin Jaeger did these, or no? That's
no. This is Beekler.
Beekler, yeah.
Beekler did the effects and directed that one.
The goofy ass chiclet teeth. So it's got the triangle on the head like sits lower than it ever has before and is a different shape than we've ever seen before. And then like the ones that are usually on the cheeks, the little red triangles are gone. They're worn off. And there's some very specific wear and tear to it. And you know, I thought I did a pretty good job. I'm proud of it.
I'll preface this joke by saying I love that movie and it's one of my favorites too. But when you said it's a different flavor, yeah, that's cheese flavored, bro. Like 7 is one of the cheesiest ones, but it's fucking great. Like, do we need a girl with telekinetic powers? Nope.
No.
Do we need a dad to come out of, like a dead dad to come out of the water and take Jason at the end? Nope.
Nope.
Do we need Jason's mask to literally spring off of his face to reveal like a house-esque zombie? No. Is it awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, as far as final girl fights go, like, I don't think you will ever find a more like bitchin' ass final girl scene. Like, honestly, I can skip the rest of the movie. Most of the kills are just okay. I mean, sure. None of them, there's a couple like head chops that when you get to see the gore work, but it's one of those ones that's really hamstrung by the censors and kind of, you know, wish there was a good director's cut.
There's unrated.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not. So there's like a couple good pieces, but at the end, I mean, you know, this is one of the best versions of Jason. Obviously, it's the first appearance of the guy whose name I'm going to forget right now because Kane Hodder. Yeah, he is a beast in this thing. And like he gets electrocuted, thrown down a flight of stairs, lit on fire for one of the longest on screen full body burns you would had ever seen at that point. He still has scars from this fucking thing, falling through stairs, like just getting his ass kicked. And it is a bitchin' final girl fight. I love it. Like it's one of
fun.
My,
yeah, like, it's. I mean, I was going to say, it's not the most realistic Friday the 13th movie, but it's fun. And I agree with you. The design is bitching, like, because it's he's zombie Jason, right? Like, he's got like exposed skeleton ribs sticking out.
You see like the back, like, you know, his shoulder blades. You can see him like fucking great. I love it.
It and doesn't work as good on the hands because you could see the skeleton fingers clearly on gloves. But like, fuck it, man. Come on. It's the 7th movie.
Yeah, right. I'm having a good time. And it's fun. Anyway, we have an episode to talk about. We can get sidetracked about Jason. Like, I mean, we could continue talking Jason after the theme song, but the theme song's an important part to kick the show off. But follow us on social media.
Because it goes like this. No, we changed it.
I forgot. I totally forgot. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at LaunchpadPod. Our website, LaunchpadPod.com. Watch us on YouTube. We make funny faces. And other than that, let's get on with the show.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to Launchpad Podcast. I'm Aaron.
I'm Matt.
How about that new theme song, Matt? It's scored by us. You know, we doop, did doop, it. Doop, 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 doop,
doop, doop. It was different every time I booped it.
I could talk Jason Voorhees all day, but that's not what we're talking about today. Today, I came completely unprepared. All I can talk about is Cookie Monster, Gonger, or fucking Elmo, because that's all I fucking watch. Apparently, that's all I get to watch now is Cookie Monster and Gonger and Elmo.
So yeah. Usually when Aaron and I record, a couple days previous, we'll say, hey, do you want to do an episode about Jason Statham? Like, one of us will throw an idea. Sometimes we debate it, but usually we're just like immediately, yeah, that was a good idea. Let's do that. And we do our research and we do it. Sometimes we have ones where like, hey, did you see this movie this weekend? Yeah, I did too. All right, let's talk about that. Or we'll just be like, let's just catch each other up with what we've been watching or doing or whatever. We didn't do that this time. And I don't want to say this is the first time we've ever not done it. No point in this week did we say, hey, what do you want to talk about this weekend? And I have full confidence that we'll be able to make a at least listenable, watchable episode out of this. But it did make me nervous when you were like, I have nothing to talk about. All I watched this week was Sesame Street.
It is. Yeah, it's amazing just what you'll sit through to keep your kid happy for like 20 minutes while you try to eat dinner or finish your own dinner. Because like inevitably, like you're trying to make dinner, you make dinner for a 1 year old. She sits down and is like, nom, 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 all done. And you're like, I haven't even put my spoon to my mouth yet. And she's like, I'm done. And you have to like address it immediately or she starts throwing the stuff off of her high chair. Like, I'm done. Drop it on the floor. I'm done with this. Drop it on the floor. And you're like,
how old is she now?
She's 1.5.
Okay.
Which I used to like hate how people are like, how old's your kid? And they're like, 20, 21 months.
47 and a half months.
And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Right. I don't know what any of that means. But now that you have a kid, you're literally counting the months because fucking from 1 year, from 12 months to 20 months, so much fucking changes. At 1 year, she wasn't walking. At like 16 months, she's just like tear assing around the house. Like so much changes. So when you meet somebody with a kid, that's why that like month marker, they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But like to an outsider who doesn't have kids, they're like, so what are they walking? Are they crawling? What are they? They don't know. They don't know. They don't care. One, they're like, ah, it's a baby. All right, I get you. So yeah,
well, I get you.
So I wanted to talk about how Cookie Monster. I did see a cool movie. I saw an interesting movie. It's a classic. And you know, every now and then you bring up a movie like The Bad Seed, or we talk about like an old film that's like, oh, like Night of the Hunter, where you're like, oh, this is interesting. This isn't as good as those movies, but I think it is considered a noir classic. And I do like a noir classic from time to time. I watched The Postman Always Rings Twice, the original from 1946. Now, this was remade later in 1981 with like, I think Jessica Lange and Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson.
Sexy as fuck. Wait, what? Jack Nicholson was sexy? It's like, when has he ever been? But like this movie's like lusty as shit. And Jack Nicholson's like, yeah, come here. I'm going to throw you on the table. And like, and you're like, I don't know how Jack Nicholson suddenly became this like awesome sex symbol with his receding hairline and creepy eyebrows. Like, how did that happen? Was that a thing? Was that actually a thing that like,
I mean, maybe it's in the context of the movie, like the movie made him more hot, but every once in a while, like I'm man enough and comfortable enough in my heterosexuality to say that a man is attractive. If I see a man like Channing Tatum, he's attractive. Ryan Reynolds is gorgeous, but like, I don't see Jack Nicholson at all. And there are times where a woman will say such and such is attractive. Like there have been women who've said that I am attractive. And I'm like, sorry, I don't see it. Jack Nicholson is a great example. Like, what's the handsomest you've ever seen him at?
The Joker, period.
And not Jack Napier, the Joker.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Because at least he like dressed up, like, look, eccentric enough that you're like, he's probably pretty. He's going to show me a good time. I mean, he might kill me at the end of it. But like, I mean, we're going to go to some fine art restaurants before we do. You know, everybody else around us is being gassed to death with laughing gas. But like, we're going to have, he's like going to show up with a boombox. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. I had the Harley Quinzel moment of.
I was just going to say, it was very Harley Quinzel. What you're saying here, my friend.
I had the moment of like, yeah, I could see it. But Jack Nicholson, no. But I didn't watch the Jack Nicholson one. I got to, you know, that'll be the follow-up episode to this unprepared episode.
Okay. Yeah, well, you come back lusting over Jack Nicholson. I get it, guys. I get it now.
I get it. I had that moment for Prince once. I get it. Okay. All right, you want to, let's sidetrack. Fuck it.
There's no sidetrack because we don't have a track today.
So my mom today always,
this episode is all the men in movies that you eventually found attractive.
Oh my God, I just got, no. So my mom had always been a Prince fan, and I was always like, I don't know.
She was
kind of weird. You know, you don't know what's happening. As Prince will tell you, is like, people are like, is he gay? Is he, nobody knows. He's just raw sex. And I never got it until the Super Bowl where the Colts won. And this is like, we were roommates at the time. So this had to be like 2008, 2009. And the Colts made it all the way to the Super Bowl. My home team, go Colts, I guess.
I was like, are you a sports guy now?
And Prince was the halftime show. And I was like, that guy? Okay, fine. It's pouring rain. And they're like, we might have to cancel the halftime show. And apparently Prince said, fuck that, and performed. And he put on a show that made me go, oh, I get it. Prince is a fucking rock star. And in my mind, what had to have happened backstage is they're like, hey guys, halftime show people, Prince, we're going to have to cancel it. And Prince was like, no, the people came to be entertained. And he gave this like Patton-esque rousing speech with like an American flag behind him, made the filthiest gesture with his tongue possible, got everybody riled up. And then he went out there and put on a show wearing higher heels than his backup dancers, shredding into the night as his image was projected with his phallic-esque guitar rocking against the silhouette of a blowing sheet in the wind while it poured down rain. And you were like, this guy's a rock star.
And your dick moved a little bit when that happened.
I was like, whoa. Yeah, just out of the sheer rock star nature of it. Yeah, I mean, fucking what a badass. And he put on one of the greatest shows I ever seen. I had never really cared about the music. I had never really given a shit about any of it. But you're like, wow, that guy can fucking shred. And then after that, you see different examples of Prince being a fucking rock god. Like, how about the time famous Beatle, I don't know, Paul? I don't know. One of the ones who's not.
One of those famous Beatles.
Paul Harrison? No. There's a tribute concert to him, and you have like Tom Petty and you know, a bunch of I think the Boss is there, you know, the Bruce Springsteen. They're all, you know, doing this While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and they're doing a tribute to him and the former Beatle. And Prince comes out to do the guitar solo for While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And he starts shredding to the point that everyone else is like, oh God, we're afraid. This guy is so good. And he bends over backwards off the stage in an impossible like maneuver. And somebody from the crowd catches him, and he's shredding upside down now. And Tom Petty's like losing the beat of the song that he's doing a tribute for, because Prince is like crushing it. And then Prince stands up, hits the last card, throws his guitar into the air, and it disappears like fucking magic. And he walks away. And everybody's just like looking into the sky. Where did his guitar go? And it was like, fucking rock god. Fucking rock god. That guy's okay. Awesome.
I mean, maybe I'll like that. You've intrigued me enough to find those clips. I don't know if it'll have the same magic, but
I mean, you'll have to go, that's pretty fucking baller. To be like, hey, yeah, I'll come perform on your little tribute to a Beatle, but I got to do the solo and I have to make you all look horrible. Cool. Cool. All right. Bye. Also, I'm going to do a magic trick.
Yeah. You all walk off stage holding your guitars like assholes.
I'm going to chuck mine into the air. And like, how did you, at what point did he show up and be like, all right, I need 30 minutes alone in this room and set up my magic trick? And like, nobody else came prepared with magic tricks. Like, fucking Tom Petty's like, he's like sitting here doing one of these like thumb tricks, or he's like, whoa.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. Did any of the other musicians try to make up for it after he left? Like, oh, I also have this trick.
I think one of the backup singers was like, oh, I just made water appear on the stage because I pissed myself because it was so fucking awesome. Ta-da. I don't know. I don't like, it's fucking incredible. Have you ever seen Purple Rain?
The movie?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. I think
I saw it for the first time over quarantine.
Okay.
And the movie starts with this chick. Prince is like playing guitar at a club and everybody's going nuts. Yeah. And this woman gets out of a taxi. She gets a hotel room, and the whole time the music's playing. And she like listens out the window of her hotel room. And she's like, someone is playing a guitar like a fucking rock god. I'm going to find that guy and I'm going to fuck him. And I was like, that's a fucking intro to a movie. So she like Pepe Le Pew, like, you know, in the cartoons when the smell of good food like drags somebody off their feet. Like, she just like floats on her ears to this rock god who is just like this tiny little dude wearing frilly shirts shredding on a guitar. And sure enough, she's like, you're mine. And he's like, cool, makes it happen. There's a moment in that movie where they're like, it's like the sex scene, and it's like, oh, this is kind of filthy. And he's like behind her, like grabbing, you know, it's real salacious, real sultry. And for the briefest second, he pings the camera and looks right at you. It's like, yep. And you're like, oh, whoa. You saw me watching you. Fuck, dude.
And then he takes her naked body in his hands, throws her into the air, and she vanishes.
Ta-da! And then you just have to clap.
Then he looks at you again and winks.
Yeah. You just have to clap. Weirdest thing about Purple Rain, Prince is the bad guy.
He's like, weirdest thing about Purple Rain, no Purple Rain.
No Purple Rain. Weirdest thing about Postman Always Rings Twice, no Postman. Bringing it full circle.
I'd watch that. Crossover. I'd watch that crossover.
Postman Rings Twice 3, actually full of witches. Season of the Witch.
All right. So yeah, going back, Postman Always Rings Twice. Throw the summary down.
So there's this drifter guy, and he like shows up after hitchhiking a long way, shows up at a gas station that has a sign that says help wanted. And this old guy comes out. He's like, you know, you'll love it here. You can stay here. You can live here. I make great burgers. You can eat for free, but you just have to do hard work. And the guy's like, all right, I'm good at hard work, but I have a problem. I got itchy feet. I take off all, you know, every now and then. He's like, all right, well, I'll see if I can keep you here. And the guy's about to like, nah, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to do it. And suddenly this like bombshell shows up and he's like, oh, I'm taking that job. It's Lana Turner. She's smoking hot. And he's like, ooh, I'm here for it. John Garfield, the drifter. But the old man, Cecil Kellaway, is her husband. So it is this hot blonde bombshell is married to this old dude. And of course, the young drifter and the young chick start hooking up. And halfway through all of this stuff, she's like, we should kill him. And then we can be together. And he's like, terrible idea. And they're like, no, we can't do it. And then like, of course, you know what? Let's come back to that idea, thinking it's a good idea. And so they try to kill him. And then it turns into like a courtroom drama. And long story short, they kind of get away with it and then become sort of celebrities because of it. But then like, it never will let them go. Like, it will always haunt them forever. And then just when they kind of reconcile it, she dies in an accident and he gets pegged for the murder. And that's him. That's the end of the movie, is him going to the gas chamber. And like, the reason it's called Postman Always Rings Twice is because he says this thing at the end, just when he's like about to go to the gas chamber, where he's like, you're waiting your whole life for something to happen. It's like when you're waiting for a package and you're like, did I miss it? But no, you're never going to miss it because the postman always rings twice. And I was like, man, I've been waiting for this whole movie to hit the titular line. Christ, I don't even know if I follow your metaphor, dude, because I don't let them ring. I have a sign. It's like, sleeping baby and angry dog don't ring my goddamn doorbell. So they don't ring at all. And they just leave it on my doorstep. They obviously didn't have Nest back then.
Yeah. What is it, a thriller or a drama?
Yeah, it's noir. It's hard noir, like crime thriller drama type stuff, because it's like, you know, real heavy shadows, that era where everybody wears cool hats and fedoras. But, you know, it's all about them trying to get away with murder and then like getting caught and then trying to like get away with it again. And, you know, the sexiness of them being like, oh, no, I want you, but I can't have you. Kill my husband, please. Like, all right. But again, like, we were talking about this last week, so many movies where people are like, let's commit the perfect murder, and then they're terrible at it.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're screaming at the TV like, come on, this is obviously not how you get away with this. How are you so fucking stupid? And you're like, wait, am I a genius criminal?
I think in the 40s I could have gotten away with it. Now, maybe like in general people were dumber then, so maybe 40s Matt would be not as hip to shit as I think I am right now. But I think contemporary Matt in 40s setting, where there weren't like ATM cameras and fucking everywhere, gas station. Yeah, I could kill. I mean, I could do whatever I needed.
That's the thing is, like, back then, like, between cities, nobody talked to each other. But right, now it's like, now you can't get away with anything. And that's why, again, it's like always impressive to me when it's like the guy dribbling about aliens and Satan gets away with like 15 years worth of murders. And then it's like, you know, the former astronaut who wears a diaper and buys a bunch of gas and drives across state lines in an impossible amount of time just to kill her husband. It's like, man, you thought this all out, but you put it all on the same credit card. Didn't think of that, did you? How those diapers fitting now?
Oh my God. That would be a bitchin' Halloween costume.
It has a double benefit. I never have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
I know.
That's right. Yeah. You don't have to stand in line at the bathroom. Jesus. It's funny that you brought up noir because we're recording this on July 10th and Criterion and Barnes & Noble are having a 50% off Criterion Blu-ray and DVD sale. Ooh. So I've been spending so much stuff on art right now and this beautiful Predator statue that we'll show you when I get it. But I'm trying not to buy DVDs, but Double Indemnity is a newer title on Criterion. And that is my peak of film noir. That's my favorite one.
So
I
good,
love
dude.
It.
That has one of my favorite things where he's trapped in the hotel room and they're like tied to each other with the phone line. Right.
I remember that, but maybe I haven't seen it in too long. This is like a same principle, a guy and a girl. They get involved and they try to kill somebody and then they're trying to get away with it. And every time they try to get away with it one way, you know, someone pulls up behind them or something. And it's I forget the actor, but I want to say it's the My Three Sons or like a comedic TV show actor. And he's like
it's Fred McMurray.
Yeah. And he's like a pretty cool character in this. And just remember, it's like one of my, because, you know, like you said, noir is all about shadow and light and darkness and how that lighting is used in this, you know, so many scenes. That's one of my favorite examples of it. And I love the shadows and the light sources in that movie.
Yeah. All these movies are like, don't trust hot chicks who think you're interesting because you're not that hot.
And I don't, gonna get dude. I told you before, when a woman says I'm attractive, I'm like, what's your angle here, pal?
Ghost.
Yeah. Like, or before murder. This goes any further, let me show you my bank account because I don't want to get murdered over $3,000.
It's them trying to get you to murder somebody for them. Both these movies, it's like, she's like, oh, my husband or boyfriend's mean. You should kill him for me. And like Double Indemnity, he's like, oh, you're so hot. Yeah. And they kill this guy together. And then they go on the run and she turns out to be like a psycho and he's like trapped. And she's like making him, you know, hide out on the lam with her, which is not the sexy time that he thought it was going to be. It's terrible.
Yeah, because it does sound sexy, but yeah. Yeah. I see how once you get into it.
Yeah, it was way hotter when we were just talking about all that murder. Then when we actually did the murder, she like totally turned into a dead fish on me.
I don't think Amanda and I could do a murder together. I think like we have a hard time cleaning the garage. I was gonna say,
just packing for vacation can turn into an argument. I can't imagine the weight of death on our shoulders. Like, you know, there's that big pile of mulch in the backyard we got to stay clear of. Don't let the dog dig in that.
Does Kate sell you out? Like if you guys co-murder and then are, you know, have a spat and a fight between you, is Kate the kind who will like throw you under the bus and blame you and turn you in?
I don't know about that, but like when we're having a conversation like at a party and I'll embellish something, she'll immediately call me on the truth of that, whether it matters or not. But now I look like a liar in front of everybody. So, so I don't know if murder was on the table, whether that would still stand.
So in court, they'd be like, the victim was stabbed 37 times and Kate would be like 32.
So there's it would be interesting, but you're right. I think it's hard enough to just get the car ready to go somewhere I don't think we'd be good at murdering people.
I don't know that I'd want to murder anybody with anybody. I think that's a a solo thing for me. Oh, I'm like a troll on, freak. Matt. And
I'd murder with you, but you would be like the one who I'd be like, all right, 10:30, let's do this. And you're like 10:30 a.m., 10:30 p.m. Eastern or Pacific. You're like asking a million questions on text, like just setting up how we do this. Like Matt and I have like a long text story because Matt asks like a lot of particular questions and I'll be like, 10:30 my time, Peter. Wait, hold on. And he has like a million questions for stuff. So I'd be like, you know, to do the thing, wink. And he wouldn't pick up on the wink. And like, oh, there'd be a text thread with all of our plots. And all the times Matt was like, okay, set in stone. Is this for sure happening?
Are we doing this for real? And the way we do like all of our interviews and Comic-Con and everything, you're always like, you set it up. Tell me what I need to do and I'll be there and we'll do it. But you figure out all the details. You don't want to know when the badges are coming in the mail. You don't want to know who we have scheduled what every day. You're like, you know, you have all your questions for everybody. And you're just like, tell me what time we're going to this person, when we're going to that person.
Yeah. And we'd probably set up like an emoji code and you'd be like, wait, what did the eggplant mean again? Did that mean murder or dicks? I can't remember.
What does eggplant pizza mean?
Yeah, the technology would fuck us on that end. Suddenly I'd accidentally get like an hour long like audio message of you just being like, yeah, me and Rumi, we're gonna go kill this guy. It's gonna be great. We have this awesome thing set up and nobody's gonna know because we have a secret code.
You'd have to use nothing. You couldn't use the cell phone for anything.
No.
Even setting up an alibi, because all those idiots on Dateline try to use their cell phones to set up alibis. And they're like, well, I know that cell phones ping on shit, so I'm gonna go drive some shit to do this.
Yeah,
like, oh well, I couldn't have done the murder because while the murder was happening my phone was traveling over here. But then 2 days later that same phone is at the fucking murder site again and you're like, dude, you know that phones can be tracked. Why did you go back to the murder site with your phone?
I mean, it's just like protest rules. Turn your phone off or don't bring it with you. Like, if you're gonna go put on a mask and throw some Molotov cocktails, don't bring your phone. Period. What do you guys think?
Protest rules.
Yeah. Don't take pictures while you're there. If you have to document, bring a dedicated camera that can shoot video.
Just so you know.
Oh, just like, yeah, the Jody Arias. Don't take pictures of the fucking corpse and then wash the camera because the you can still get the pictures off the camera. Idiots. Double Indemnity is great. I love Postman Orders Rings Twice. There's some great noirs, man. I do love me some. Blast of Silence is a great Christmas one where this like hitman.
I think you talked about that recently.
Yeah, I love that one. Noir is a very interesting thing because, you know, it's of its era and it's like about villains. It's usually about people doing dirty. And the interesting thing is because of how the codes work, you always had to be punished at the end, either murdered or gone to jail. Always. The cops had to win. Those were the rules of television and movies back then. So the cops always had to win. You either had to die or you had to be put in jail or something. And that always made it like, you know, there's always that end where like the good guy cops roll in and kick your ass. But the movies themselves, like the plots and the twists are always pretty fantastic. Nightmare Alley, which was just a remade movie. The original is a fantastic noir that starts with a guy like biting the heads off chickens and being like, oh, it took me a long way to get here. And he tells a story of how he used to be like a fraud mentalist and then gets double crossed by a dame. That always happens. That's classic.
Another interesting part, too, with the with noirs is a lot of times it's nonlinear storytelling in that you're hearing the story after it's happened from a character who isn't involved. Like Double Indemnity, he's leaving wax scrolls for the newspaper guy or whatever that he worked for the department. Right. So you're hearing his narration in a flashback of that, which is, I think it's like a cool convention to have as part of a genre.
Well, and one of my all time favorites as well, Sunset Boulevard. It ends with him in the pool dead. And you're like, bet you wonder how I got here,
it
kid.
It starts with him in the pool dead.
Yeah. Starts with him in the pool and then goes full circle of how he got back.
That's a really good one.
Body ended up floating in a pool. But there's like, definitely some good tropes and some good noir. It was the 75th anniversary of Roswell, the most famous weather balloon crash ever.
Mm.
Do you believe in aliens, Matt? How do you feel about little green men?
I guess I don't believe in them, but I don't not believe. Like it makes sense to me that we are not the only sentient, intelligent, quote unquote, life that there is. You know what I mean? Our entire planet is full of shit. and it has been full of shit for so many hundreds of millions of years. And there's so many planets in existence. Yeah. That, like, how can we be the only thing? I can't believe that that would be the case.
Because it's all fake.
Outer space?
Yeah. It's all just a simulation, and that stuff is just filler. No, I'm in the same boat with you, where it's like, I do believe that the possibility has to be there mathematically. But sure. I also believe, like, they're not here chilling with us because we have so many fucking cell phones right now. Like a politician can't get caught killing a hooker without somebody videotaping it. Why in the world would we not have hundreds of hours of video of aliens everywhere if they were, like, actively checking us out? But again, it's like every now and then, it's like, I believe that maybe one passed by and we got a good clip, you know, good little blurry video of it. You know, UFOs are a thing.
You know, that's actually pretty funny to think about. If you think about all of the UFO footage that exists and that the Fox channel puts out and everything, yeah, that was all before cell phones. Now that we all have cell phones, there's not as much of that shit happening anymore.
Right.
Like, easier to document, but less instances of it. So what does that prove, right? We don't have a lot of cell phone footage of Bigfoot or anything like that.
Exactly, right? It's like, yeah, how come the only time we could get evidence is when camera technology was at its shittiest? Like, that's...
And not everybody had a recording device on them at all times.
All times.
And also, if you guys disagree with us, if you think that there is a lot of good footage of these things that we're saying right now, there's not, please say so. Please comment and let us know that we're wrong and that there is a lot of good footage, and show it to us, because we would love to see Bigfoot footage. We would love to see current alien footage.
So the Navy recently released a bunch of documents, right? And in those documents were some actual footage that the Navy is like, hey, y'all, we honestly don't know what this is. We're not saying it's aliens. We will not cop to that. But we don't know what the fuck this is. And it's some grainy ass footage from a plane of some shit zipping around faster than it should be. And pilots, like, lucid, not stoned, fucking, whoa, man, check out this UFO. Like, pilots being like, what the fuck is that? It's going really fast. That's interesting. And again, I'm not going to go, well, that's it. Proof that all alien xenomorphs, ETs, and predators are real. Because that's the other thing, is people are like, one thing's real. It all must be real. It's like, look, just because you have one thing doesn't mean all things. It's hey, that's a thing and nobody knows what it is. But that's weird, crazy. And that's cool. And there is several instances of this. But Roswell, I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of this. Area 51 Roswell is a famous thing in 1945, 75 years ago, as of Friday. There's a crash in this farmer's field, and he was like, goddamn aliens. And the famous story is that, no, it's a weather balloon. Here's what I think happened. Here's my personal take on it. Again, unconfirmed, but I think America had just hired a bunch of Nazi fucking scientists in Project Paperclip. This is true. Brought them all the fuck over to help us build spaceships and stealth bombers. Because, hey, we won the war. We get the cool scientists now. We're going to hire them. And they're in the New Mexico desert building experimental planes. One of those experimental planes crashes in this guy's farm field. And the government shows up and they said, Mr. Farmer Guy, I'm so sorry that this happened. He's like, the aliens. And they're like, yeah, go with that, dude. Fucking have a nice day, sir. You enjoy those aliens. And they went back to their bosses and like, it's cool, man. He thinks it's aliens. And the bosses are like, you can't let him think it's aliens. You got to go back and tell him it's a fucking weather balloon. He's like, really? Because nobody's going to believe him about the aliens. Cut to 75 years later. Everybody's like, aliens. And they had to go back and tell him it was a weather balloon, which made it worse. Because then he's like, the government's trying to cover up the aliens with the weather balloon. And they like had all this weather balloon shit. But literally, you look at like the spacecraft they were trying to design out in that desert, like in that area, the early stealth prototypes is like, yeah, they look like fucking spaceship shit you've never seen before. You ever seen a stealth bomber in real life? It looks unfucking believable. And then it crashes in the desert. He goes out and finds all these like burnt up jockey sized corpses of some pilots. And he's like, aliens. And you're like, yeah, I totally understand why he said that. And I totally understand why the government was like, yeah, have fun with that, and left, and then had to come back and be like, no, it was a weather balloon, some shit. You want to cause a panic? You tell them it's a weather balloon. It's like, actually, I think changing the story right now is just going to solidify it into the most.
Yeah, we can't lie twice.
Yeah, the greatest proof of all time of aliens. Roswell, man.
I think it was all real. I think it was real aliens that the government tried to cover up. But what you said is true. It's just another level. I think they're like, oh, shit, aliens. We should tell we should let this guy think it's aliens, then come back later and say weather balloon and say and let other people think it's a pilot from a stealth bomber. You ever see a stealth bomber in real life? The government said.
I buy that. Yeah. I loved how Independence Day took all that like lore and wrapped it into their movie. One of the best alien movies of all time.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to say, I think Independence Day is a great time, you know? And I love what they did with Area 51 and like just took all that shit and just piled it into their movie. And it's like, man, they nailed it. Cause nobody else had really done that other than like Alien Autopsy or some shit. You ever see Alien Autopsy? You ever get a copy of that on VHS and watch it?
I don't think I ever saw it, but I remember when it came out, I was young enough to be like, oh, that's, I mean, it's on the news. It's proof. And then like come out here and I'm working in, you know, Hollywood and I know men that worked on the Alien, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like you've seen the mold for it. And they're like, yeah. Such bullshit. And like, again, it looks terrible. Like it looks worse than Star Wars. Like, and like Star Wars, I buy like Star Wars is a good benchmark and it looks worse. Like you have to at least look better than a rubber werewolf mask in a cantina scene, which I buy. Again, I buy that there's a werewolf. He's a, that werewolf was thirsty. So yeah, the Alien Autopsy guy looked like shit. So I don't know, man, just like even the thickness of his skin when they cut him open, you're like, that's latex. Yeah.
But because the footage was grainy, you're like, maybe. Maybe. The farmer was like, I knowed it. I knowed it.
I done seen it. Weather blew my ass.
The best is any of this shit that like some people think are real, some people think are not real, but there's no definitive, let's just say scientific, indisputable proof. I have to be careful at school with a room full of 5-year-olds because sometimes it'll come up or sometimes a kid will just flat out ask. And like one time I said, well, like, fairy tales, they're called fairy tales because they're make-believe, like fairies are make-believe. One kid was like, that's not make-believe. And I was like, oh. And then she was like, I saw a fairy in my backyard. And sometimes kids say that and I look at them and I'm like, fuck you. You didn't really see that. You don't actually believe that. You're just saying that now to get these other kids to believe you. But this girl, for sure, I looked in her eyes and I was like, Robin, you do think you saw a fairy, huh? So I was like, fuck, how do I say this? I was like, well, scientists have not seen them enough yet and they have no evidence. Like they understand the concept of evidence, but like when kids say something about aliens, you'll have kids who are like, aliens are fake. And then two other kids will be like, no, aliens are real.
My uncle like, got abducted by an alien. He said they did.
Have no proof. It's just, but they are like what you and I just said about how like their brains don't work where you and I are like, I don't believe that there's any scientific proof that there's aliens. I personally have no personal experience with aliens, but I'm open and I think intelligent enough to think that in a universe and galaxy upon galaxy, as vast as we do understand, and that's just what we understand, there's got to be something else out there.
Now,
or at least I'm leaving it open that that's a possibility. Kids' minds don't make possibilities. No. It either is or it's not. Isn't, yeah. You know? Like Darth Vader isn't a bad guy who turns good. He's just a bad guy. At a certain point in his life, he turned good for that last 30 seconds. But like a kid won't be like, you can't, when you say to like, I'll say to a kid, well, a lot of people think there's aliens and some people think there are no aliens, but there's no evidence yet. Scientists have looked, scientists have done tests and tests have shown nothing. That doesn't mean that there isn't any, but it also doesn't mean that there is any. I saw one on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a big okay. Ask. Now, here's the thing. I've said that I don't believe in aliens. I've seen a UFO up close and personal.
Where?
We were in Colon, Michigan. This is not a joke. This is a real place. It's in the bowels of Michigan. The joke gets funnier. We used to rent a cabin there and our whole family would go and stay at the cabin on a lake for a week. I'm fishing at the end of a dock. It is very quiet, just having a good time fishing, when suddenly a craft comes over my head so low that it startles me. Like I almost fall off. It is silent. Shroom, flies over. I just watch it fly off into the distance. I can draw this thing from memory still to this day. It is a silver ship that looks like a Stingray Corvette with a purple dome on top. And it's not like a disc shape. It's shaped like a car, but, you know, has like a swoop to it.
That's Queen Amidala's ship.
It was a Naboo freighter. I go in. Nobody else saw it. Nobody else knows what I'm talking about. Cut to a few years later. We're at Washington, D.C. at the Air and Space Museum. They have a section about UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. And there's a bunch of hand-drawn pictures of what people have seen as UFOs. And somebody had drew the exact fucking thing that I saw. And that's when I was like, what the fuck? You know, and again, I don't know what that was. Again, is that aliens? I don't know. But I saw a thing fly over so close to me that it scared me. But I don't know what the fuck that was. Colon, Michigan's a weird place because everybody's like super militia there. Some like yokel could have built a flying thing for all I know. I don't know. Holy shit. But the fact that somebody else has seen that thing was like, well, that's fucking cool.
How old were you?
13, 14.
Oh, that's like a great age to see aliens, I think.
Yeah, I know, right? Because you're just old enough to be like, bullshit. But then you see it and you're like, I don't know what's real.
Do you think that somewhere now out in the galaxy, there's two other aliens and they're having a podcast and there's like a Nipto alien and he's like, I was flying in my ship and I know people don't believe in humans. I don't know why he's got like a weird voice, but I know people don't believe in humans, but I swear I saw one sitting on a dock.
Yeah, he was playing with a stick and that stick had a string on it. He was trying to catch fish.
And I went to the Natural Fish and Wildlife Museum, and there's a whole section on humans. Someone drew the exact idiot that I saw in Michigan.
Perfect. It is real. Nobody believes you. Scientists have not proven that.
Here's a movie idea, right? A Pixar movie idea. That joke, but a movie. A kid sees an alien. The alien sees the kid. Maybe this has been done before, but both are the stories are paralleled back and forth where no one believes him. No one believes the human that he saw, you know, E.T. and on E.T.'s home planet or back in E.T.'s ship. Nobody believes E.T. that he saw a human. And then they eventually meet and the aliens take over the world and kill everybody.
Kill everybody. I love
and
that.
And he becomes their pet. The boy becomes their
pet. I love that because, you know, there is always that good, like, dual beliefs. Nobody dueling beliefs. Nobody believes them, so that they're the only ones who can find each other to like prove it. I love that.
Or what would be cool is a Twilight Zone episode, same premise, but you see a human kid and mommy, I saw an UFO. She doesn't believe him. Weird things start happening around the town. Finally, it's revealed that there is a UFO out in the woods. The townspeople crowd around and they're like looking at the UFO and the door opens and it almost like the day of the earth stood still and a human in space clothes, but a human walks out.
They
look at each other and all of a sudden he pulls up something that looks like a gun. And one of the people on the ground has like an alien tongue and the alien tongue impales what we think is the alien. And it turns out that was human. We were on an alien planet the whole time.
Whoa, that's a good Twilight Zone, I think.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to somebody this week about like sci-fi and like history of sci-fi. And I don't know, we're just getting weird deep in sci-fi. The War of the Worlds, which is one of the most famous sci-fi stories, was written mm-hmm. in 1898. Shit's bonkers, dude. That is way old. And then like John Carter of Mars, which is an OG blueprint of like, hey, you saw Avatar? Great. You've seen John Carter of Mars. Hey, did you see John Carter Mars, the movie? Nobody did. But that it's an OG blueprint of sci-fi.
Yeah.
That was written in 1911. And they knew back then that like if a human went to Mars, they'd be stronger because gravity's less. So they have like they can pick shit up out there. And it's like it's fucking bonkers. They were figuring that shit out way back then.
Yeah. How did they fucking know that in 1911?
Because aliens told them, duh.
Make a comic book about John Carter of Mars. There's less gravity up there. You guys would be stronger.
Like, damn, alien told me. Fucking A, man.
Alien told me to make this comic book about John Carter of Mars.
Yeah. It's going to be a shitty
about
movie.
I was thinking about War later. Of the Worlds the other day, the original one. Kent has been watching a lot of 80s cartoons, Transformers, He-Man, and a lot of those have recycled sound effects. What were we doing? I think it was either Transformers or Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There was the, you know, the flying ships in War of the Worlds, that laser blast.
Yeah.
And it's just that, I mean, that's one of those things you could hear half a second of that and it immediately brings me to that movie. I remember the first time I watched that movie, I was trans fucking fixed. That, and that's a Criterion that I bought a couple years ago and watched. The special features are just, you know, when you, not to knock on CGI, but when they didn't have CGI and they had to do like a movie like that, where you have these floating saucers that are shooting things out of their little periscopes, breaking the models around them. And there was an effect in the movie where when they were being shot, you could see a visible force field around them flickering in and out. I mean, it's just to get all of that shit in the camera is, I mean, I guess there was some optical effects, but still, it's just fucking magic to watch those, you know?
And back in the day, how you did an optical effect is fucking bonkers. Because you literally have to set up a camera system that's about the size of like a football field that you keep shooting through different plates. So you have the film. And you run the film in the back.
And it was actual film. You took the film that the movie was on.
Yeah. And if you fuck this up, you've ruined your movie and you got to like redo it from the negative. So you're running the original film on the back, quote unquote, plate, and you're shooting through that. And then on top of that, you're layering the different animations that you've literally hand drawn, hand painted, you know, with chemical effects to create glowing effects, to create, you know, laser blasts. You literally had to do that by hand and then run that through another piece of film in front of it and then shoot through all of those onto a new set of negative blank film. And that's how you would re-expose everything to layer up to get laser blasts and lightning and electricity effects.
You think about all that, how long and how deep into that process you have to be before you can see if it's working. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like you can pull up the digital model on the monitor and look at the monitor of what you're shooting and look at the monitor of what the CGI creature is going to be. You had to shoot it right on the day, kind of without really knowing, or you really kind of do the math beforehand. So you knew where your plates would line up and you knew where your shot would be. You knew where the composite would happen or where the fucking matte painting would be. You know, it's, I mean, fucking magic. But that movie has all of that shit. And it's just so cool. They're sneaking around the house and then you finally see the Martian. And as goofy and silly as it looks, it works. It's a fun scene. And that is pretty creepy. He's a weird looking little Simon. Beep, boop, boop,
yeah.
Boop.
Yeah. With his little laser eyes. Yeah. I love that. Again, to talk about something that was like remade over and over and over again, like fucking great. And I always think it's funny, you know, when you talk about War of the Worlds and obviously the radio drama, Orson Welles doing the radio drama and people like freaking the fuck out because they thought it was real.
That.
Like that in itself is so fucking cool. And people are like, are people really that stupid? And it's like, motherfucker, back in the day, people would look at a movie of a train and be like, it's coming at us.
Well, it also, it's deeper than that because that's where they got their news was the radio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how could you not be confused by that?
Well, it's crazy. And it's like, motherfuckers, you don't even listen to the whole headline before you're off running being like, it's true. You see like six words of a Facebook post. You don't even read the subtext. That's still there. You don't click on the link and you guys are off running saying some shit's true. You know, he's a clone. You're like fucking idiots. Of course you believed it. It would be so much easier to make you believe that aliens crash landed today than it was back then. Because a radio drama, somebody listened to it for like 15 minutes was like, bullshit. No, bullshit. Wait, for real? Like they at least listened to it.
Yeah.
This today, people read like six words and like will repeat it to you. You'll be like,
that was fact. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know all about
that's fact. And you're like, you press for 3 seconds. You're like, wait, for real? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I didn't read the article. It's like, wait, but you told me the headline verbatim as if it was truth and you read it. Fuck you, world. It'd be so, we should try that. Let's see if social media can convince people that aliens have landed.
The only reason, for the same reason we think it would work, it wouldn't work. Because the couple people that were interested and tried to corroborate it, they'd see immediately that it was not because the sources wouldn't be there. Because that was part of the thing is you're getting this news that, like you said, if you were like, really? How would you check that? The only way you check that is to turn to another station, another radio station. That was literally the only thing you could do. Or you could call, you know, you could call somebody and people in fucking Grover's Mill, New Jersey, which is where the story started and took place. They were calling each other like crazy. But at that point, they thought they were fucking under attack by aliens. They weren't wasting time ringing up dispatch so that they could call somebody.
Well, again, I also want to know how widespread this panic was, or if like the report of the panic is also conflated.
Sure, sure.
Like Orson Welles is like, wait, we made like four people panic. Well, I'm going to run with that in the newspaper. And then the newspaper's like, all these people in the Midwest are freaking the fuck out about alien invasion. So then by the time that newspaper article spreads, people are like, huh, oh my God, people thought that this was real.
America like, was sieged by terror.
Yeah. When it's like maybe seven people in, you know, the middle of bumfuck nowhere heard it on the radio and freaked out. And that's true. But like, how big was this panic? I actually am very interested to find out how big that was. But, you know, again, that's great. That sells. That's great. That's a great press to be like, mm-hmm. we made, even if you made one person panic, like that's fucking great.
He got in so much trouble over that too, but he stood his ground and was like, no, fuck it. We gave a warning a couple of times and it was clearly fake. And what do you want me to do?
It's pretty brilliant. And like,
he was a genius.
He was. He was also a piece of shit, but that's okay. A lot of geniuses.
You can be both. It's okay to be both.
You can be both.
remakes. Did you watch the Tom Cruise one?
Of course.
War of the Worlds. What do you think?
Steven Spielberg. It's fine. He draws me out of it because it's him. Yeah, because it, okay. This ties it back to the noir very well. A lot of times when I watch these older movies, I'm like, this is fucking brilliant. And part of why I think I'm into it so much is because I don't recognize any of the stars. I don't know who these people are. So it seems more authentic to me. When I watch a movie and it's like, here's fucking Tom Cruise, I can't not be like, there's that guy from Mission Impossible doing a thing. You know, it calls attention to itself, and that movie feels less authentic because of that. And that's a bummer to me, because I think Steven Spielberg is normally really good about that. Like, even Indiana Jones finds a way to make me believe that that's Indiana Jones and not, oh, that's Han Solo doing a thing. Like, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, how they present it, I buy that character more, just how they do it. And for whatever reason, it never drew me out of like, this isn't Tom Cruise doing a Tom Cruise thing in a Tom Cruise movie. Like, I couldn't even buy that it was a Steven Spielberg movie. It doesn't feel like a Steven Spielberg
movie. No, it doesn't. It's very like, for me, it's epic in some of the scenes. Like when him walking through the plane crash was cool.
Yeah.
When you first start seeing the tripods and they're vaporizing people with those rays, that's cool. The scene with him in the house and the, you know, the mechanical thing comes in and it's looking for him and the that's cool. But like, it doesn't have the chutzpah or the impact of the original. It doesn't feel like a Spielberg movie. It doesn't differentiate itself from any of the other movies I've seen where there's an alien invasion. It's not bad, but just so what? Like, okay, that's fine. What?
It's also really sterile. There's a scene that I love, and I will always return to this as like an impactful moment. It's when she's like washing her face at the river after being like reunited, and like suddenly all these corpses float down the river, and it's like, mm-hmm. oh, fuck. That's fucked up. But again, like, look back at early Steven Spielberg alien work with like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That to me is a better version of War of the Worlds done by Spielberg than because some people are scared. Some people are like elated. Some people, you know, are so intrigued by it. And the aliens and the spacecraft are more believable. And again, this was just very CGI and sterile. And it's not bad CGI, but I don't know that it loses something in that. And I don't know.
Also, I don't care. I don't like the dynamic. I mean, I get it, but the dynamic of having the story center around a family of three that gets split up for days in a city and then find each other later. Get the fuck out. I remember they like find the boy and I was like, come on. It would have been cool if he was just gone. But like, I get that's Spielbergian, I guess, but it's not bad. But like, it's one of those like, I don't own it. I have no desire to own it. I have no desire to rewatch it.
Yeah. If my kids ever like, hey, have you ever heard of this H.G. Wells thing? I'm popping in that original. Well, fuck not even the original. I'm popping in the 60s. Yeah. I'm popping in the 60s one before I pop in this one. It's tough. Yeah. You know, there's just a lot better alien invasion movies than that. And it also alien invasion movies. And again, when I was researching the original War of the Worlds book, their fears about world tensions, like Denmark had been invaded at that point. And they were like, oh shit, you know, like being invaded must be a horrible thing. So there's a world tie-in thing. And like in the 60s, it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a very fear of communism sort of thing. Like, or fear of McCarthyism. Like, oh my God, everybody is, you know, a communist or, you know, some sort of McCarthy witch hunt shit. Like that's why all that stuff works. And when the Steven Spielberg came out, like what were we scared of at that point? What was the invasion that we're labeling into that movie? So it also didn't hit quite right. You know, it didn't have that like
world. Oh, I get what you're saying. Thing. So when the War of the Worlds remake hit, topically, we didn't have the same tensions.
Yeah,
where we were worried about an invasion.
Yeah, I mean, there is no. Again, I am not some border controlist, but you know, if you're going to talk about like invasion as a political metaphor, like, are we talking about like the southern border? Like, they're coming for our jobs. Like, that doesn't ring right for a alien invasion movie, because the alien invasion stuff is about like, you know, military might, not people trying to escape drug lord. Like, you know, that's what Session 9 was about. That District 9 was about that idea of refugee as aliens. And I thought that was brilliant. District 9 is brilliant for that metaphor of like an alien invasion, but one done as a refugee, as opposed to a military might invasion. So again, like it didn't really hit in a way that I think was making a statement that was topical.
District 9, I thought about revisiting, because I haven't seen that movie in 10 years. It's
fucking
good, dude.
It's fucking good.
I remember loving it, and I think I have it on DVD. Actually, maybe I don't. But it looks so good. It is such. I remember thinking the same thing. The first half hour of that movie, you're like, oh, these are refugees. I thought that was an interesting take that we really hadn't seen before. Certainly not seen to that scale. And then at the end, it just turns into like baller fucking makeup action shooting movie. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah. And as this guy like sacrifices himself to just save a couple of aliens, I was like, that's fucking awesome. I like Neil Blomkamp. I think he's a phenomenal director. I know that District 9 is his best film and his shorts are really good. But like, people did not respond well to Elysium, which I loved, but
I thought it was fun. I mean, District 9, you could study, you could rewatch, you could.
Yeah.
Elysium, I didn't feel the same about, but I feel like that was fun. It was a good movie.
I think Elysium is one of those movies that's like, if it were in French, we would have forgiven it more. But like, because it was in English, it's like, the script kind of sucks. But if you were like, I'll chalk it up to translation, you're like, yeah, the movie's not that bad. and then nobody liked Chappie, which again,
Chappie was just a watered down robot version of District 9.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, it didn't bother me. I liked it, but I'm not.
Yeah, gonna,
I don't. I would rather rewatch District 9 over and over again than ever see Chappie twice.
Yeah, we'll never watch Chappie. I mean, there's you see it once. I don't need to see it. And I love Dee Antwoord, but I'm not going to watch them again. I don't need to watch them again.
Yeah.
They were not the acting prowess. I expected that to be that. But
yeah, it was like, you were in a movie. Good for you. Well, guys, what movie would you never revisit because it had Dee Antwoord in it?
No, that's not the end here. The end here is which male rock star did you find yourself having a crush on in the rain?
You're like, and then one day I was like, Willie Nelson. I get it. Those braids. Damn. Put him in. He can always ring twice. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at LaunchpadPod, and our website, launchpadpod.com. Check us out on YouTube. Guys, this has been fun. Matt, this was good. Even though we came in freewheeling and swinging, this was fun. I cracked
up. We think it was good. Do you guys think that was good? Or you're like, ugh, talk more about stuff. We talked about movies and things. I feel like last episode we did way more dad stuff than we did today.
Yeah.
Today we did more movie stuff and murder
stuff. I think we touched on a few things, you know. Prince touched on us.
Yeah. Prince touched on you for sure.
And then
sure.
Made eye contact directly. Just for the briefest second, but it's enough to see through my soul.
That's awesome. I'll revisit that movie too. And the magic guitar and also the rain guitar.
Go watch Prince play While My Guitar Gently Sleeps to some. Why can't I remember the Beatles names? I know my.
George Harrison.
Yeah.
Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
So Paul McCartney's still alive. So it must be George Harrison's tribute. Yeah. Okay. There you go. We solved it. I know my sister-in-law, who is the biggest Beatles fan, is like disowning me right now. She's like, you can't remember the Beatles names. I'm like, George, Paul, Ringo, John.
The other guy. Number four.
Not the drummer. The other Not the singer, not the drummer, not the one who's alive.
You had
alive.
To process the elimination for probably the most famous band in the history of music.
They're fine. I have nothing against the Beatles, but I'm also not like Beatles.
Oh, I agree. My dad is a big Beatles guy, and I heard so much Beatles growing up. I don't ever need to play a Beatles song. I don't know that I will ever willingly, like on purpose, play a Beatles song because I want to listen to it. If it's on, I got nothing against it.
Sure. But I own several of the, on vinyl. I have Sgt. Pepper's and the Yellow Submarine and the White Album and Revolver.
I love to hear Paul and John and Ringo and all the rest.
Ringo Starr was on Shining Time Station for the longest time, and I always loved him as Mr. Conductor.
He also narrated an animated movie called The Point. Did you ever see that?
No, is it good?
This is a random movie me and my sister saw as kids. It's interesting. One of those interesting, trippy 70s cartoons. I think it was 70s. It might have been early 60s. I think it was seven. And he did all the music too.
The Beatles did one of the most famous trippy 70s cartoons of all time in Yellow Submarine. And they're like, hey, do you want to do that again, John? He's like, no, I'm dead. And they're like, okay, what about you, George? No, I'm dead. What about you, Paul? He's like, I'm on tour. And they're like, Ringo, what you got? I got nothing going on. I'll do it.
Oh my God.
Let's blast this thing off.
And then our hands are magically disappeared like a Prince guitar. Tom Petty's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck? We're the Rocketeers and we're out.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.